Hey there, everybody. It is Thursday, February 21st, 2013, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line. Send that email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. And of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. So much to talk about on this week's show. We must get started with our first guest. Josh Rosenzweig is Here TV's Senior Vice President of Original Programming and Development. Here TV's mission is celebrating LGBT stories and providing a nationwide outlet for television and film projects to have a platform and a voice. They air on all major U.S. cable systems as a 24-hour subscription service, and they're celebrating their 10th year. Josh, welcome to The Show Is So Gay.
Oh, thanks so much, Ken. That's so sweet.
So much to talk about with Here TV.
All right, well, where do we start?
10 years. 10 years, Josh.
Yeah, 10 years.
How long have you been with Here TV?
Well, I've actually started as an outside consultant working with Paul Kolishman, and at that time it was just Paul and maybe three or four other people at the network, and I came on probably 8 or 9 months after they launched, so almost exactly 9 years ago. It'll be 9 years March 1st.
You wanted them to get the drama out of the way, and then you came on, because that first year can be rocky.
Well, it was just, you know, a scrappy little group of folks, and I, like I said, I was working sort of as an outside consultant on PR and marketing for them, and then a year later, they sort of stole me away from the agency I was working at, and I came on full-time. So it's 9 years with them and 8 years for them.
What appealed to you about working with Here TV?
Well, you know, I had, my background is in film and theater and television and stuff, and I'd always really wanted to create, like even the short films and stuff that I did and music videos and stuff when I was living in Los Angeles, you know, being gay and telling stories about my life was always sort of either directly or even indirectly infused into the work I was doing. I wanted to be part of this sort of new movement in gay media. There, I live in New York, and there was a point where Showtime and MTV and CBS were all sort of dancing around launching a gay network before Logo. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to be a part of it, and it just sort of never took off. And, you know, I was kind of disappointed that I didn't get to. And then when this landed in my lap, I was like, yes. And at that point, there were three gay television networks. There was Here TV, there was Logo, obviously, just about to launch, and then something else called the Q Network.
I don't even remember the Q Network.
Yeah, Q Television was around. It was based in Southern California. It only lasted maybe 15 months, 18 months.
Okay.
It came out real strong in terms of, like,
advertising. And then what happened?
You know, it was just one of those things where I think they just sort of, like, just kind of went away. And,
yeah.
And then it was just sort of us and Logo. And, you know, we've sort of been just the little sort of, you know, slow and steady.
Now, you keep mentioning the L word, and I didn't know if I should go anywhere near that word, because I don't know if it's like a Sharks and a Jets thing with Here TV and Logo, if there's competing softball teams. What's the real scoop there?
Well, you know, in New York, when Logo and Here launched, me and sort of my group of friends, some of us went over there and some of us went here. So, you know, we all have, like, a really sort of friendly sense of competition. You know, the reality is that particularly in the early years, we weren't necessarily competing directly because, one, you know, Logo is a basic cable service. So they were really seeking, you know, advertising dollars.
Right.
Here's a premium service like HBO or Showtime or Cinemax. And so we were competing for subscribers. We were really looking for people to spend the $5.95 or $6.95 a month for our service. So it wasn't really a direct competition. People were always trying to put us in competition, and it was sort of friendly, and everywhere we were, they were,
right,
and vice versa. So we all sort of became friends, and, you know, I sort of feel like, particularly early on, it was important to have them, because otherwise we were sort of out here on our own, and
yeah,
it gave us sort of something, you know, to our sound bounce back off of, if you will. And, you know, it became a little bit different as we began to acquire more properties like Advocate and Out and Gay.com. You know, and then the advertising dollars did come into play a little bit more. But, you know, the television division, which is really what I work for, is pretty much still sort of its own sort of independent piece. And, you know, I support what they do over there.
Yeah. If someone said, all right, but what's the difference in programming, how would you answer that?
Well, it's always, you know, it's sort of the difference between, like, what MTV can do and what Showtime can do. You know, like, what we, the depth of the stories that we can tell is a little bit greater just because we don't have to worry about the SEC rules that apply to basic cable. So we can go a little bit further, you know, we can push it. We don't go any further than, like, A Queer as Folk or, you know, something like that, but definitely showing and telling and saying things that you can't do on basic cable.
Yeah. Now, a senior vice president of original programming and development, I have no idea what that means. My hope is that you do.
I'm trying to figure it out.
Okay. What have you figured out thus far?
Well, basically, I know that I've got the greatest job in the world.
That's a good start. That's a very good start.
And, you know, we look at how many hours of television we have to create or acquire or license for a year. So I work with very closely with the SVP of Operations and Programming out in California, who's responsible for filling those hours. So he says to me, Josh, we need, in fact, I was just on the phone with him, we need, you know, 15 more hours for May and June. So I'm like, well, we are going to have these three pieces of original programming, it looks like we can acquire these two movies. How close am I? So it's about either creating or acquiring or licensing or something, figuring out how to program the channel and create enough content that to fill the hours on TV. And I think the thing that people don't realize is that it's a beast that needs to be fed constantly. And, you know, we, and I am sure this is true for all television networks, you know, the biggest, you know, sort of challenge we have is filling those hours with as much new and fresh content as possible. I mean, anywhere you look, it's like, oh, we're going to play, you know, 6 hours of this, you know, program. I mean, at a certain point, you just have to because it's so cost prohibitive if you have a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week, 365-day-a-year channel to just, you know. I mean, in back in the old days, you know, they used to sign off at 2 a.m. So.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm not going to name any names of any specific stations, Bravo. But if I miss an episode, I know that I can catch it within a few hours because they're going to replay a whole marathon.
Exactly, exactly. And we try not to do what some of our competitors do, which is, you know, play things that don't necessarily appeal to our sort of target audience.
Right.
So we don't necessarily have, like, long marathons of things, but we do every once in a while.
Yeah.
So, you know, we tend to repeat some of the films, and, you know, it's an interesting puzzle, and I welcome, like, people who, you know, have a hard time with it. They should just, you know, it's one of those things where, you know what, spend a day trying to program a television channel. It's, like, crazy insane.
I would rather not. I would rather not. Now, the big question is there a wealth of content out there to choose from?
I believe there is.
Yeah.
I believe there is on many levels. One, we do a fair amount of in-house production ourselves here at the network. So if we're looking at somewhere, you know, in between 170 and 250 hours of television a year. That's basically, because basically you want to schedule so you have at least 6 months of new content, and then if you have to, you can repeat the majority of it, right?
Okay.
So that's sort of the rule of thumb. So we create somewhere of those, say, 150 to 200 hours, we create between 65 and 75 hours of original content ourselves, just in-house, here, writing, producing, shooting, editing, all of that. Then the rest of it is made up of a film library that my boss, Paul Kolschman, and his business partner, Steve Jarko, have acquired over the years. It's a series of great titles and sort of classic LGBT films. And then the other part is finding new material. And there are LGBT film festivals going on all year long.
Totally.
And there are filmmakers who are dying to have their work be seen. And, you know, this sort of brings me to, like, you know, one of the things that I'm most excited about this year, which is in celebration of our 10th anniversary, we were looking back at our core mission and really thinking, like, hey, what is it that was so important 10 years ago? And it was about creating an outlet for LGBT filmmakers and content makers, giving them a place to show their stuff. And,
yeah,
you know, especially now with the sort of challenges that independent film in general has, let alone independent LGBT film, you know, distribution deals are hard to come by, television is hard to come by, and so we really are looking for these folks to send us their movies or send us their series, and we want to put them on the air. So I think that, you know, from the response, we've only been doing it now, I think the release went out 3 weeks ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, we've gotten a great response, and I think that there is just a constant sort of refresh of new material, you know, month by month, year after year.
And this is going to be going on all throughout this year.
It is.
So folks can just go online and learn more about that and send in their material.
Yeah, it's called the New Frontiers Film Project. All the information is at HearTV.com. You can't miss it. And yeah, I've got maybe about 20 some odd films sitting on my desk right now. So just have to now figure out when I'm going to watch them and get through this first initial stage. And yeah, we'll be looking to acquire films all year round.
Film Festival at Josh's House, everybody, this Saturday.
Exactly.
So we will list that address for you on our website, and we'll we'll show up. We'll show up. Now, I have to tell you that were I you, and I still wanted to have friends, I would not tell people what I did for a living, because I would imagine that people are pitching things to you constantly.
Constantly, yes. I mean,
how many of those ideas have you used?
Well, it's hard. I mean, because I always say my week is not complete until someone pitches me a drag cooking show or a gay travel show.
Crap. Okay, that's two down. I got one left.
Both of which, you know, I love and would, you know, we want to do a travel show and we want to do a cooking show, but those seem to be like the sort of common denominators of pitches. And you know, I have to be quite honest, and it's, you know, I imagine that there are people who work at much larger networks or much larger studios that have a much larger problem with it, but, you know, I don't generally like to say exactly what I do when I go out, if I'm just meeting people, just for that reason, because it's like the next thing you know, it's like, well, you know, oh, I've got this script, or which I don't mind, I actually
right.
don't mind people, but like, you know, if I'm out with my friends and we're just having a good time, and I don't really love getting a pitch in the middle of a crowded, noisy bar.
I would say, just kidding, I work at Bloomingdale's.
I used to tell people that I owned a miniature golf course.
A gay one.
Yeah, well, that was my go-to. I was like, and we're thinking about adding a water slide.
It's like a metaphor. It's like some sort of metaphor.
But, it kind of is.
But there are, we should say, you know, there are tons of folks out there, because it seems like I'm sure there's a ton of different levels of people who have their ideas. One is people who have something that they can send in to the New Frontiers Project. Mm-hmm. But then you have these folks who have that germ of an idea, and maybe they have a script, but they don't have anything filmed yet. And let's say, first of all, do not approach you in a bar and start talking to you about it, because there's a more professional way to do it. But what should they do?
Well, it's tough, because generally, what we do is we don't take unsolicited manuscripts. It gets into a bit of a legal problem too. God forbid, you know, can you send me your idea? I want to do a gay drag cooking show and I don't even see it. Let's say it goes into a general email box at, you know, HearTV.com or something.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't even see it. But then, you know, within the next year or so, I'm like, you know what? I think, you know, ideas float around in the ether. It's amazing how, like, you put one out and the next thing you know, Drew Barrymore is doing a roller derby movie.
Right.
So to avoid that and then somebody coming and basically suing me for stealing their idea, we don't generally take unsolicited pitches or manuscripts. So when you come in and you're like, hey, I'd really like to pitch you something, or if you are lucky enough to have an agent, they send you my way, basically you have to sign an agreement that says, you know, oh, God forbid, you know, an idea pops up out of Hear TV that's similar to yours, you can't sue me. That's the most important step for me, because I need to protect my company.
Right.
And it's really about just that crazy liability issue. And I don't ever mean to be rude, because, look, I was that filmmaker.
Yeah.
I was the one who was running around with their, you know, feature film script in their hand for years. And so I understand the sort of want and need and to get that in the right person's hands, but there's also a lot of other things that go along with it.
Now, what would you say is the market need right now for a reality show about an independent gay radio show in southern Vermont?
Oh, there's a need.
There's a need. with a drag cooking segment. I mean, yes. Which I don't even want to put out there because you've already hit on my biggest problem in life. Drew Barrymore steals all my ideas.
Well, I mean, honestly, I used the roller derby example as a joke, but that, you know, that I thought I had like the great, you know, the next great, you know, American comedy, which was this women's roller derby movie, and the next thing I know, she's doing this roller derby movie, so.
You gotta get on it.
Damn.
Everybody has an idea, don't they? It seems like, you know, everyone's like, and then they followed up with, but seriously, Josh, no, this one's a real one, and it could make it.
This is gonna make you millions, that's what I hear.
I just want people to listen, Josh. That's all I want. I don't need the billions.
Exactly.
I'll take them. Now, 10 years done. 10 years done. 9 years for you, but 10 years for the rest of us. What is the next evolution of Here TV? What are we moving towards? Because let's be upfront, and there's no one here on the show right now from Logo to dispute this, but one of the common complaints that we've talked about on the show is that with some of your competitors or one main competitor, there's a feeling that some of the content has gotten less gay.
Well, I think that for us, the future is TV everywhere. Aside from creating new content and overseeing, you know, various different things, you know, marketing and creative services for the company, you know, my main mission this year is to get Here TV, the brand of Here TV, everywhere I possibly can, whether that is through YouTube or Amazon or Hulu or, you know, in the United Kingdom, or increase our cable footprint, get it on satellite. Any possible outlet where I can get it is what my goal is. And okay. I think that at this point, so many different people are interested in getting their content in different ways, whether it's on your phone or your iPad or your tablet or your computer. I mean, I meet people all the time, honestly, who are like, yeah, I don't have cable or I don't even have TV. So it's a hard sell if you don't have TV.
Welcome to Vermont, Josh.
Exactly.
Welcome to Vermont.
It's like, how can I even – then I'm like 4 steps behind. How can I upsell you on a subscription channel?
Right.
So I want to make sure that the accessibility to Here is easy and available and just sort of a great interface wherever it is that you choose to do it.
Are there markets in the country that I'm hoping not, but that refuse to carry Here TV?
No.
Great. This is good.
The only, and I can't, and like, honestly, like, this will come back to bite me, but the only market I know that we're not on at this point, like major market, is Salt Lake City. And I could be wrong. They, for all I know, that could have changed, because like, it was years ago when we were just launching on Comcast.
Mm-hmm.
Comcast, which, you know, is one of the largest cable providers in the country, if not the largest. Basically, it's sort of a blanket deal. So you go into all, like, they agree to carry you, you go into all Comcast markets. And I think we went into all Comcast markets except Salt Lake. Now, that, like I said, it might have changed. I should really look into that. But I know that was the one that we didn't. And the only other one that we weren't in, which we are now, which I'm so excited about, is, because this happened about a year and a half or 2 years ago, was Central Florida, Orlando, because that's a Time Warner system, and that's exactly the opposite of Comcast. So they agree to carry you service on a corporate level, but then you have to go around to each of the markets, and each of the markets has to agree to carry your service. And there was a very conservative man who ran Central Florida's Time Warner Bright House service, and he did not want to carry it. But he's gone, and once he was gone, they picked the service up, and we're doing great in Central Florida.
Well, one of the challenges that we talked about in covering LGBT issues in the media, well, twin challenges, one of covering LGBT people of color and one of really getting trans content out there. How's Here TV doing?
Oh, it's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough. You know, it's on the content and production and development side, our biggest challenge is serving as diverse an audience as is the LGBT audience. I mean, again, you know, to the outside world, we're all the same, right? Oh, one gay channel is just like another gay channel. And it's like, well, that's not true.
Right.
And so, you know, I feel like even beyond either people of color or even transgender content, where we really even come up more short is programming for women.
Interesting.
And again, you know, we've had this constant, you know, sort of conundrum since the beginning. It's like the guys don't want to watch women's programming. The women don't want to watch guys' programming. When you put the two together, you lose. But it's like, oh, it's so frustrating. You know, it sort of mirrors what I think is one of the biggest challenges within the LGBT population, is that we're, you know, it's like the women and the men don't really socialize and they don't overlap, even though we're thrown together in this LGBT group. You know, it's like, oh, the women party over here, the men party over here, they have their own events, you know. We're not one, and that's why you'll rarely hear me use the word community, because we are not
right.
a community.
Right.
It's a population of people, and a population that is kind of as diverse as the population of the world. So to answer your question, it's like, I wish we could have very specific people within our division to address just that, to address women's programming for people of color, transgender. And, you know, we do pick up a good deal of acquired content that has either transgender issues or is created for and by people of color. Can we do a better job of it? Hell yeah.
Right. And thus, with the New Frontiers Film Project, one could argue that you all would be most open to content from LGBT people of color and the trans community.
To the front of the line.
Not a bad thing.
We're showing a movie that we acquired, not through the New Frontiers Project, it was a little bit before that, that will premiere on the network in March, called Out in Mumbai, which follows four different people in India coming
wow.
out. And one of them is like part of this sort of, I don't know how you would describe it, it's not completely transgendered, but in India there's a slightly religious group called the Hijra, which is sort of in between sex, and they live this very interesting life because they're both sort of like revered and loved and sort of worshipped. And if the Hijra come to your wedding to bless you, that's like a great omen. But they are also ostracized as well. So this weird sort of dichotomous existence that these people live. And so that we're showing that in March. And you know, we do some drag stuff, which I know is not too sort of gray the area of transgenderism, but,
it's a piece. It's a piece of our elaborate puzzle.
My very first short, which I did back in, like, 95, was a 45-minute film that was written by Jackie Beat.
Oh, I love Jackie Beat.
Jackie wrote it and starred in it. It was with Jackie, Sherry, Alexis Arquette, and...
Wait a second, didn't I see them all in a show?
I don't know.
What show did I see all of those? It was the little murder mystery, the Edgar Allan Poe one.
Oh, Telltale.
I saw Telltale. I remember that. Sorry, I'm having flashbacks. Go ahead.
Well, okay, we'll put a pin in Telltale, and we're going to come back to Telltale. This is funny. And it was Alexis Arquette, Robert Ring, Jackie, Sherry, and this guy Sam Pancake, who is not a drag... one of the funniest performers ever. And it was a 45-minute short called Scream Teen Scream, and it was a parody of horror movies. And it did really well in the festival circuit. It was picked up by Strand and sort of did this, like, crazy midnight movie circuit, like at the Castro and different theaters. And out of it, we ended up pitching a show to MTV. And this is 1995, mind you.
Yeah.
And, you know, drag, they were just like, we don't understand.
What is
this? They didn't even know what it was.
Right.
I mean, and the fact that, like, literally, there's not a block in New York City that I can walk down that I don't see RuPaul's Drag Race is kind of phenomenal.
Yeah.
So, you know, it takes time, but I think we're going to get it all.
We're going to get it all. We're going to get it all. Do you want to return to Telltale?
I directed Telltale.
No, you did not.
Yeah.
I remember, and let me see if I, at the Cherry Lane Theater, I want to say
correct.
That I was an RA at NYU, and I took a big group of my students to go see Telltale. And some did not speak to me again, and others came out of the closet.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you for coming to see it. We started at PS122, and then it transferred.
I remember that, too.
My ex-boyfriend, Eric Jackson, wrote it, and obviously Sherry and Jackie were in it. Mario Diaz played Pete the Boy She Murders, and the amazingly brilliant, insane Basil Twist did all the special effects.
I remember having a poster, the Telltale poster, in my dorm room for years and years, because I have to tell you, and with all sincerity, it was kind of a way of saying something about myself without, you know, this was, what was it? It was 1997, somewhere in there?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of a way of coming out to my residence without really having to come out, because there was no way that you would just randomly have a poster of Telltale in your dorm room.
That's funny.
So look how you helped me.
Oh.
And it comes full circle, folks, full circle. So for our budding filmmakers, because you are a filmmaker, once a filmmaker, always a filmmaker, for our budding filmmakers who have that idea, how do they take it from the page and turn it into content that they can submit for the New Frontiers?
You know, there's a couple different things they can do. One of the other things that we will be doing come June, so June through probably the beginning of September, we're doing a short film. It'll be the Here TV Short Film Festival and Competition.
Okay.
So that's a great way to do it. We're going to be having open submissions for the festival for those 3 months, for June, July, and August. We'll close it right after Labor Day. There'll be like a celebrity panel jury that will select a prize, and it's three categories: men's shorts, women's shorts, and documentary shorts. And then the winners will get a prize and be programmed into a sort of larger piece on the network and also on our digital sites. And that's a great way. I mean, that's kind of what I was always more interested in, short format initially anyway, which is like why I think I ultimately love television, because it's 22 minutes and you're in and you're out and let's go. And
right.
Even though my shorts tended to be long, like Scream Teen Scream was 45 minutes, I did another short.
Yeah, that's not so short.
A featurette called Charlie, also with Jackie and Sherry and Candace Cain and Mr. Sormica and Justin Bond, and that was like 58 minutes. So the shorts were really pushing it for me, but you know, you can take it, and you know, unlike when I was a student and wanted to make these films, you know, we could only use film. And when I said I was going to shoot this thing on video back in 1994, people look at me like, you're insane. Like,
right.
Nobody's going to show it. It can't go to any festivals, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's going to look like crap and everything. And I'm like, I shot it like a movie. We lit it like a movie. And, you know, lo and behold, like, you know, the whole sort of video wave. And so just get a camera. It's amazing how creative you can be on a really sort of low-budget, scrappy level.
Yeah.
And that's kind of who I am. I mean, I wouldn't even know what to do with a lot of money.
And so we're kind of living in that age where if someone has an idea, the barriers to getting that idea onto film, they're just not as great as they used to be. There's so much more access for people to get their content out there.
That is correct.
Love it. Love it. All right. Well, the New Frontiers Film Project, everyone can stroll on over to heretv.com/newfrontiers, and we'll link up to that. And get your ideas out there, folks. No more complaining that people aren't making the content that you want to see, because you are more than capable of making that content.
It is true.
All right. And of course, for people just to get Here TV, to watch it, what should they do?
Well, they can either call their local cable provider, wherever that may be, or they can go, if they're not sure, they can always go to heretv.com. They just type in their zip code.
Yeah.
Yeah, zip code, not area code. Zip code, and it'll tell you who your provider is or what. I mean, because sometimes now, you know, you have a couple different options in different markets. So, yeah.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, look, sir, you and everybody over there at Here TV, you are providing that voice. You are giving people access. And gosh, there are so many people across the country who don't have access to the LGBT community. There's not this place that they can go. They struggle to meet other gay people. And to have an outlet to, in our student development philosophies, you know, this whole phase of encountering, the idea that people can encounter other LGBT people is huge for this positive identity development. And Here TV plays an integral role in that, because you give people that opportunity. So you're going to keep doing this work, I hope.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Hey, Josh, thanks for Telltale.
Thank you for bringing everybody to Sherry Lane.
All the best to everyone there at Here TV, Josh.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
During the time of which I speak, it was hard to turn the other cheek to the blows of injury. insecurity, feeding the cancer of my intellect, the blood of love so neglected, lay dying in the strength of its impurity. Meanwhile our friends we thought were so together, they've all gone and left each other in search of fair weather. We sit here in our storm and drink a toast to the slim chance of love's recovery.
All right, folks, and we are back. So much LGBT news coming at you for this week's show. We're going to separate it into two segments, and I am indeed flying solo. Jody will be back with us next week, but for now, you're stuck with me. Let's talk about some of the biggest gay news stories that are hitting the wires this week. In Massachusetts, we love our education stories. We love our education stories and making changes in schools. Massachusetts schools are now required to allow transgender students to use facilities and participate in sports designated for the gender with which they identified under policy guidelines that were issued last Friday. The guidelines state, quote, school administrators and counseling staff should work with students to address the discomfort and to foster understanding of gender identity to create a school culture that respects and values all students. So, obviously, that's a really big deal. That's a really big deal. But we also want to acknowledge that just putting it out there doesn't necessarily make it so. And so in order for administrators and counseling staff and teachers to make a difference for transgender students, we know that right now there is so much education that is needed because they put it out there. There was a survey not that long ago of school social workers saying, look, we don't actually have the training in LGBT issues. And it wasn't they didn't want the training, they just didn't have it. So along with this, these new guidelines in the Massachusetts schools, my hope is, and we'll look into it, we'll give you an update on this, my hope is that there's also just tons of education that's going to happen for these teachers, administrators, and staff, because that's really what's going to make a difference. So that's a good thing. That's a good thing. There are a ton of stories that are hitting the wires right now about immigration as President Obama and House Republicans and House Democrats and Senate Republicans and Senate Democrats are all kind of talking about immigration and what are we going to do about immigration and can we actually create some policies that make sense for this country. The spotlight then shines on the plight of LGBT couples of which one of them is a U.S. citizen and the other is not. And we talked about this a little bit on last week's show because one of our senators here in Vermont is trying to make a difference as it regards to immigration. But we're also seeing some really sad stories, and we knew that these were out there, but they're just getting more and more press. Brandon Perlberg, an American lawyer in a relationship with a British man who lived in the U.S. for nearly 7 years on a temporary visa, he quit his job in New York and moved to London after his partner was unable to obtain a visa as a permanent U.S. resident. Perlberg and other Americans in same-sex relationships with foreign nationals are not allowed, if you did not know, they are not allowed to sponsor their partners for naturalization. So we want to feature more and more of these stories. So if you have any stories of people you know, or if perhaps you are in you are a U.S. citizen or you are not and you're in a relationship that is really being hurt by the immigration laws in this country as they pertain to LGBT Americans and their LGBT partners, please let us know. Drop us an email, send it on over to ken@theshowisogay.com. We want to feature more and more of those stories. A story that you might not have heard about, but it is very much a big deal. The Department of Veteran Affairs will now allow same-sex spouses of veterans to be buried at a national cemetery in Oregon. Now, that doesn't seem like a big deal. It's a huge deal. VA Secretary Eric Chinesky, he based the decision on evidence of a, quote, committed relationship between the individual and the veteran. The Defense of Marriage Act generally forbids veterans' benefits for same-sex spouses, but Chinesky has the authority to approve individual requests. So, again, it's one story coming out of one state, coming out of one cemetery in that state, but it's one you might not have heard about, and it's kind of a really big deal for same-sex spouses of veterans. So that's going on. There was, I'm not sure if you guys saw it, Rachel Maddow did just, and as she is wont to do, just an incredible, incredible piece on Jean Manford. And if you don't know, Jean Manford is, was, she recently passed on, the founder of Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays, affectionately known as PFLAG. And she really, what this woman did, Jean Manford, and again, Rachel Maddow, you go watch her piece. It's like 8 minutes long. Totally worth every second of it. And all about how Jean Manford marched in a parade, and just by her marching and holding up a sign, and she wasn't setting out to become an activist, she really started such a movement to bring in families and friends to support the LGBT community, which is part of the backbone of the support that we all enjoy. So amazing piece on Jean Manford. And then just last Friday, President Barack Obama awarded her a Presidential Citizens Medal. President Obama said, quote, "She inspired a movement and gave rise to a national organization that has given so much support to parents and families and friends and help to change this country." That is a quote from President Barack Obama. Love to see that type of recognition coming out of the White House. But again, Rachel Maddow, type in your little search engine, Rachel Maddow, Jean Manford, M-A-N-F-O-R-D, and watch Rachel Maddow's piece on that, because it's really quite riveting and really inspiring. Individual acts, becoming national movements, becoming support for everyone. It's great. In the world of entertainment, and this would just happen this week, Clive Davis, who is, you have to know who Clive Davis is if you've ever, you know, listened to music. He is the music mogul who, he played key roles in the careers of Whitney Houston. I mean, it's really all about Clive Davis and Whitney Houston, but also Alicia Keys and Kelly Clarkson. He just came out in his new memoir as bisexual, which is a very big deal. He describes his bisexuality as, quote, "something that my children and close friends have always known, but that I knew I would need to discuss in a biography." He further writes, "After my second marriage failed, I met a man who was also grounded in music. Having only had loving relationships and sexual intimacy with women, I opened myself up to the possibility that I could have that with a male and found that I could." He further writes, and this is such a big deal, he writes, Being bisexual is, quote, "misunderstood," noting that he's never stopped being attracted to women, but he notes that it's misunderstood. He wrote, quote, "The adage is that you're either straight or gay or lying, but that's not my experience. To call me anything other than bisexual would be inaccurate," end quote. We have said it so many times on this show before, the bias against the bisexual community is just enormous. It's enormous. Everything that Clive Davis just said in his memoir, you know, that you're either straight or you're gay, or if you're saying that you're bisexual, you're lying, or you're just not understanding that it's a phase on the road to being gay, and it's just not true. It is not a phase. It is a valid identity. It is how so many of our brothers and sisters identify. So kudos to Clive Davis for coming out as bisexual and giving a voice to that community. So that's a bit of news for you. We're going to play a quick song, and then we're going to come back with a ton more news. And we are back. More gay news to throw out at you. It's been quite the eventful week. one of these stories exists as more of, you know, a possibility than an actual news story, but it's quite the intriguing and quite eventful possibility. The question on many folks' minds is whether or not President Obama is going to intervene, if he's going to say something. He has not yet done anything for the Supreme Court case on California's gay marriage ban. Some folks are saying he may formally interject the power of the White House into that Supreme Court case by filing a brief about Proposition 8. For those who need a reminder, reminders are good, Proposition 8 was the ballot initiative approved by California voters in 2008. It banned gay marriage in the state. The state's highest court then overturned it, which then set the stage to where we are now, and that's the looming showdown at the U.S. Supreme Court. Legal analysts say that if the White House does inject itself into the court proceedings, the message to the nation could be substantial and prove a decision maker to other states struggling with same-sex marriage legislative issues. The White House, others are saying, they can't sway the justices with a simple friend of the court brief, but the government does hold influence. So we will see. There's some pro-gay marriage ads out there, and a lot of folks are also saying that those gay marriage ads, which, by the way, Laura Bush said, hey, can you take my image off of the gay marriage ads? I don't actually consent to doing that. So interesting turn of development. We'll see if Dick Cheney similarly wants his face off of those gay marriage ads. But some are saying those pro-gay marriage ads are all about just influencing swing justices on the Supreme Court, that it's not about turning the tide of the nation. It's about looking at some individual Supreme Court justices. Obviously, when the Supreme Court hears this case and with their resulting decision, this will be huge. We will devote more than a bit of airtime to talking about the Supreme Court and Proposition 8 and what it means for the rest of this country. Returning to the wonderful world of education, an Indiana school district reeling from the uproar over a teacher's comments. I don't know if you folks heard about this. A teacher commented on social media that she believes gays have no purpose in life. They have no purpose in life. This from a teacher. They have suspended, the Indiana School District has suspended this woman just yesterday. Superintendent Mark Baker of the Northeast School Corporation in Western Indiana's Sullivan County issued a statement saying the teacher has been placed on administrative leave out of concern, quote, for the safety and security of everyone in our buildings. He added that, quote, as a precaution, the Sullivan County Sheriff's Department and Indiana State Police have deemed it necessary to station an officer at the school. Now, what I love about the story, certainly not to the part where the teacher made these horrible, horrible comments, but I really do appreciate that the school has taken anti-gay comments and equated them with school safety, because that is not the norm for all of our schools across the country. Schools are really good at, you know, and this is my field, I know this stuff. Schools are great at responding to physical acts of bullying. They're not great, you know, some could do a little bit better at that. But then we get into verbal harassment and verbal bullying and cyberbullying, and schools are still playing catch up on how does this relate to school safety. She said it on her own time, on her Facebook page. There was nothing violent in it except for, you know, the part where she said they shouldn't exist and they have no purpose in life, and then dot, 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 and Lord only knows what the dot, dot, dot is, although I assume that she thinks that the Lord does indeed know what that dot, dot, dot is. But regardless, this is one school district standing up and saying, we connect this unequivocally to school safety, and so we're going to station a guard, and that's the way we are going to respond. So kudos to you all in Indiana, in that district. The Southern Baptists, which, it's interesting that we can just classify them all in such a way by saying the Southern Baptists, but the nation's largest Protestant group of Southern Baptists has perhaps made the most compelling argument for the Boy Scouts getting rid of their ban on gay people by their statement urging the Boy Scouts to keep their ban on gay people. The executive committee of the 16 million member Southern Baptist Convention, they passed a resolution just this past Tuesday stating that a proposal to alter the ban, so, you know, because people are trying to alter the ban, there's a lot of call to alter this ban. They stated in this resolution, the Southern Baptists, that The proposal to alter the ban would, quote, place the Boy Scouts organization at odds with a consistent biblical worldview on matters of human sexuality, making it an organization that would no longer complement, but rather contradict our belief in God and his moral precepts that serve as the basis for our Christian faith. Now, what were they trying to do? They were trying to say, look, let us use our influence here. Let us make as clear a statement as we can possibly make to the Boy Scouts of America. Keep your ban on gay people serving. I'm chuckling because I feel that they have now made the opposite statement. Boy Scouts, if you're listening to the show, people in, which would be weird, but great. If people who are in decision-making power are listening to the show and they're like, well, gosh, what does this Show Is So Gay think we should do about the ban? We think you should get rid of it. We asked all of our listeners. Everybody agrees. But the fact that there's this group, the Southern Baptist Convention, that is equating what you all do with the Boy Scouts with biblical worldviews is exactly what you want to separate yourself from. That is exactly what you do not want to be associated with. That is not what you do. There is not a badge. Now, I'm making an assumption. I should here admit for the first time on the show, So Gay, I've never said this before, I was not a Boy Scout. I was not even close to being a Boy Scout. I knew nothing about Boy Scouts. But I'm feeling reasonably confident that amidst the badges for not tying and service, there is not a badge for religious devotion. There is not a badge for how many times you go to church. And that is not to fault any Boy Scout in this country or troop leader for religious devotion, how strong their faith is. That is has nothing to do with that. I am not making that comment. Do not send me a hate email, as I sometimes get, at ken@theshowsogay.com for being anti-religious, because that is not anti-faith. That is not what I am saying at all. I am just saying that is not the function of the Boy Scouts. The function of the Boy Scouts is about leadership. The function of the Boy Scouts is about community. It is not about faith. So for the Southern Baptist Convention to come in and pass this resolution, and again, it's a 16 million member group there, for them to come in and say, look, this is about biblical worldview, keep your ban, that is the exact argument, Boy Scouts, why you need to get rid of your ban, because you are being lumped in with areas that I know you do not want to be lumped in with. It is not what you do. It is not. So, thank you, Southern Baptists. You made one argument. I feel you made the other one. Over in Puerto Rico, not good. I don't like this one. Yesterday in Puerto Rico, in a 5-4 decision, the Supreme Tribunal in Puerto Rico, the Supreme Court in Puerto Rico, they affirmed a ban on adoption by same-sex parents in a 5-4 decision. The decision handed down by the island's Supreme Tribunal concluded that Puerto Rico's constitution, quote, does not prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation, and accepted arguments presented by the legislature that the traditional family composed of a father, a mother, and their children best protected the well-being of minors. The case, the specific case that was before them, the court was considering this case of a Puerto Rican lesbian who sought to legally adopt her partner's daughter. The couple challenged a current Puerto Rico law that bans the adoption of a minor if the biological mother doesn't give up her rights, unless the couple consists of a man and a woman. Wow. I mean, there's so many layers to this. So, you know, we could just go with, let's take this out of This Show Is So Gay. Let's do the This Show Is So Equal story. Take it out of the LGBT world. Let's put aside for a second the LGBT part of the story and say that when we're defining a traditional family as composed of a father, a mother, and their children, having absolutely nothing to do with the LGBT part of what it is that we do on the show, that right there, everyone should have a problem with. Right there. It implies marriage is the only way to go. It implies having two parents is the only way to go. It says nothing about extended families. I mean, extended families raising children and adopting them, that by the definition there in Puerto Rico and in so many other parts of the world and parts of this country, grandparents adopting their grandkids, yeah, that would not be okay in the traditional family. So that's the whole, let's take this out of the show is so gay. But you're actually listening to the show is so gay, so let's put it back into the mix. Give me a freaking break. Did I miss the part where there aren't just scores of kids who need homes? Did I miss that? Is there something that, did we solve that problem? Where there aren't kids who are waiting desperately to be adopted by people who will love them and care for them and support them? If we've solved that, I missed it and I was doing a gay radio show. So what do you want from me? I missed that story, but I can actually say with some certainty, even more so than when I talked about the Boy Scouts about whom I, you know next to nothing. We didn't solve that problem. How are we standing up and saying only certain people can care for and love children? I really do believe that that's what it boils down to. Bans on marriage are ridiculous. Bans on people visiting their partners in the hospital, ridiculous. But bans on adoption are the same as saying only you folks, and in Puerto Rico, a father and a mother, can effectively care for children. Period. This is not a nuanced argument. You can make all the arguments that you want about, oh, it's damaging to the child. Give me a break. What is being said is only these folks can care for children. I don't get it. Of all the issues, and you know, I care about a lot of issues. The blood donation thing is another one that it's like, really? Only this blood of straight people can save lives. Even though we test all the blood, only the blood of straight people can save lives. Why not boil it down to some of these things? Because it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. So Puerto Rico, you know, the five of you who made this decision versus the four of you who said no, there are a lot of people who could love children and care for children and support children. Just, I don't know, for shame. I don't usually say for shame on the show, but for shame. I just don't. That's one of those. I don't get the adoption issue. As someone who was intimately involved in the adoption process, I don't get it. Bans on gay people adopting make absolutely no sense to me, especially given how many children are waiting to be adopted. I don't get it. I don't get it. So that specific story was, you know, about one particular family, and so it's being couched in terms of when this partner wants to adopt this partner's baby, but it also extends to anybody who wants to adopt, kids who are waiting to be adopted. All right, I'll get off that topic, but give me a break. I don't get it at all. There's an op-ed over on advocate.com, and I hope this comes out right. I do not mean this disparagingly, but you have to read it to believe it. It really is just a remarkable tale. And there's a lot of just inherent bravery in this writer putting this forward. But the name of the op-ed is called Porn God, Good Samaritan, and Incredible Loss. And writer Hobart Folks writes about his encounters with Peter Cosma, who is known to many as the porn performer Arpad Miklos, who sadly took his own life a few weeks back. And this story is unbelievable. So I'm not even sure that I want to try to boil it down to anything, because I really don't think that I could do it justice. And kudos also to advocate.com for publishing a much longer op-ed than they sometimes do, because this is a pretty full tale. But it really is about his encounters with Arpad Miklos, first on the screen watching him in porn, and then actually Arpad's work as a sex worker, and the writer hires Arpad for the night. And it's really, it is a tale. It is an amazing tale. So strolling over to theadvocate.com, Porn God, Good Samaritan, and Incredible Loss. Check it out. And that, honestly, folks, that's really it for us on this week's show. Love talking about Hear TV. love talking about Hear TV. So stroll on over to HearTV.com and find out about all the cool things that they are doing. Of course, we love your feedback. Send emails on over to Ken@thisshowisogay.com. We, of course, respond to every single email you send us, positive, negative. Every single email gets some sort of reply. Go to Facebook. You can type in This Show Is So Gay, where it's about 4,000 people that are hanging out on Facebook talking about our show. Love that. And, of course, go to thisshowisogay.com. You know, yes, it was episode 200 a few weeks ago, but you can go back to episode 1 if you want. You can hear just how bad we were on episode 1. It was not pretty. It was not pretty. But Becca and I, we towed the line back then, and that's what we did. A lot of exciting stuff coming up in the next couple of weeks. We will be returning. We will be returning to our These 50 States Are So Gay series. So look for more states to be featured. We've only covered 2 of the 50. We've only done the great state of Washington and our home state of Vermont. So we got 48 more to go, to cover what all the cool things are happening in those states, folks who are advancing conversations and promoting voices on LGBT issues. So a lot to look forward to. You guys, you need to get out there. You need to use your voice to do what you can do, and you know how to use it best. We all use it differently. I do a radio show. You could host a movie night. You could do whatever you want. I firmly believe that you know how to use your voice in a very particular way to have some effect to get the voices of our LGBT brothers and sisters on the table, to get our voices out there in the world. So you do what it is that you know how to do. You know what it is. Get out there and do it. And of course, while you're doing it, remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
I'm